Welcome back, friends, for today and the next few episodes. Mike and I will be looking at the second part of Isaiah writ large. So we're going to be looking at chapters 13 to 27. So that will necessarily mean we will not be going verse by verse,
Okay.
which, we all enjoy that. You know, we do. But what at 14 chapters, verse by verse, and would retire out from here, right? So we're going to look at major themes, and of course, pull in verses where more needed, and that sort of thing. And again, we kind of remind ourselves that this particular outline of Isaiah is one of several, and they all have their strengths and weaknesses, if you will, but this is a very common one, and so that's the reason I chose it. Okay, our governing thesis: the necessity of both the judgment and redemption, and neither makes sense without the other. And so that's the thesis. That's going to be the title of this. All these, the show and the unfolding episodes is God's judgment of the whole world. So God not only has a judgment against Israel, as his firstborn, the one who received the covenant, the law, the prophets, so forth, so on. They didn't listen, so there's judgment for that. There's consequences when we don't follow the way of God. But all of us, whether we're just by the fact that we're created by him, have imprinted in our own selves what a sense of what is right and wrong. And so the judgment's not going to be just to Israel, though they have a with more given, more is expected. And Israel was given a lot, and so there's a high expectation. As Christians, my friends, the bar got set even higher for our what would be expected of us. So, but this is where we are with this second part, God's judgment of the whole world. And the judgment has a purpose. It's to open the door for joy. It becomes the clearing path, if you will, to joy and restitution on the other side. So that's the moral and theological progression that we're going to have.
I love that. I think so often we have this idea of judgment. I think in my mind, sometimes it immediately seems negative, or something like a punishment. But in reality, it's a gift to be included in this, to actually receive the judgment of God because of the door that it opens into being. It's like the idea of discipline, I think, of a loving parent, They have to discipline their children because it's more loving than just letting them do whatever they want,
I do know. I do know. And you tack on to the first, so we have to define terms. So always defining terms. And Mike is doing just that for us. So before we can enter into some of the more intense chapters in Isaiah, we need to hear the word judgment as it's biblically being used here. So in our time, judgment is often treated, so judgment in our time, the culture we live in is either arbitrary or irrelevant. Isaiah, yes, if all moral claims are relative, then no judgment can really matter. But Isaiah will not allow us that comfort. Scripture insists that truth matters, and that it is worth the cost to seek it, live by it, and be corrected by it. Isaiah is not describing judgment as divine anger flaring out of control. He is describing judgment the way a physician describes a diagnosis. Judgment names what is real. It tells the truth about what is broken so that healing is even possible. Without diagnosis, there is no cure. Without truth, there is no restoration. Historically, Isaiah speaks into real events, covenant unfaithfulness, social injustice, and the collapse that follows when people abandon the truth that sustains them. And this is not abstract theology. And it is not merely end time speculation. These judgments unfold in history through nations, leaders, and systems that believe themselves secure. But Isaiah also widens the lens. Judgment does not stop with Judah, it expands outward, encompassing the nations and eventually the whole earth. That widening is not cruelty, it is consistency. If truth is real, it applies to everyone. If moral order exists, it cannot be confined to one people or one error. Here is the governing truth that will carry us through this section of Isaiah. Judgment and redemption belong together, and neither makes sense without the other. Judgment clears what is diseased so that life can emerge. Redemption restores what judgment has exposed. If we remove judgment, redemption becomes sentimental. And if we remove redemption, judgment becomes despair. The chapters ahead will feel severe, especially the language of collapse and unmaking. But Isaiah does not leave us there. This section moves deliberately from exposure to healing, from diagnosis to life. It does not end in darkness, it ends in hope that is earned, not imagined. Isaiah insists on something our culture resists. There is no such thing as a private sin. What we choose, tolerate, or ignore always shapes the world we share. Judgment names that reality, not to crush us, but to save us from lives that cannot sustain life. So, as we begin this portion in Israel, we do so soberly, but not fearfully. Truth is demanding, but it is also merciful, and it is only by telling the truth that joy becomes possible at all.
That's so good. I love the way you've broken that all down.
Thank you. Thank you. Any closing thoughts before we go to?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's just a that's a great setup for all of this because these chapters are severe. I like that wording because I think we read it and it can seem really intense, you know, but I feel we need that intensity to understand. And just that whole idea of judgment and redemption being connected, it's like the more intense the judgment, the more amazing the redemption in a lot of ways. You know, like they balance each other out.
They certainly do, and nothing speaks to that, I think, greater than the cross and the resurrection. I think that's exactly right. All right, friends, we'll pick up in the next episode with Babylon as our archetype villain. Till then, fides erat.